Recording in progress. Good morning, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started with our meeting. We're still awaiting the arrival of one of our board members, and so hopefully she will be coming in soon. And I guess to start with, Stephanie, we'll need a roll call vote.
Susan Fowler. Neil Sharma. Kim Fisher.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Vicki Nicewander.
Here. Okay, next up is the approval of the agenda, which is the next page.
I move to approve the agenda.
Thank you, Ann.
Second.
Thank you. Any changes or anything on that? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? No. Okay, moving on to the meeting schedule, which is on page 3, just noting that it's there and also among the public documents on the website. We need to approve. Yes, we do need to approve the meeting schedule. I hope you had a chance to look at the dates. Are there any conflicts there? Need a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Kim, I'll second.
Okay,
thank
you.
I do have a question, though.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
So, just normally we meet on the third Wednesday, but there's several months where, like, Wednesday, it's the fourth, because maybe, like, the first day of the month is a Wednesday, so that's not...
The pattern for years has been the Wednesday after the third Monday of each month. So we tried to mark where it's off cycle. It's only off cycle on the April meeting, and that is because we found a holiday. April 23rd is actually Holocaust Remembrance Day, and even though that's not a day that the building is closed, we thought it might be nice to get some of the board reviews of applications done earlier this way by taking it off cycle. So, and sometimes that helps. And then there are some tentative meetings, and there's one meeting that is not marked tentative, but you may not need, and this is, the chair has prerogative to cancel that, and that's this joint meeting with the mental health board in March. That might not be necessary. We'll keep you posted. Okay.
So I guess we still have to take a vote on that, right? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? No. All right. Very good. Next up on the agenda is the acronym Citizen Input. Citizen Input. Anybody like to speak to the board today? No? All right. Moving on to the next topic. My comments.
Oh, Dr. Sharma is
on
the meeting now.
All right. Well, before we do anything else, before I give my comments, welcome to Dr. Sharma, who is participating online today. We need
Thank
to take
so
a vote to include him in the meeting decisions. So I would like to move that we include him as a voting member of the board today from the online position, and I'll need a second.
Second.
So any other discussion? Okay, let's take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Thank you for making time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, next thing up on the agenda are my comments. And I just, reading the packet this week and every month that we've had a meeting, I just want to remind ourselves that what we do here is really important work. We're responsible for a great deal of money that comes from the County of Champaign. And that is intended for the benefit of people with developmental and intellectual disabilities in our county. And so those goals, as I'm reading the bylaws, which we're approving this year, we really want to think about what our responsibility is in that and try and keep your personal feelings out of it for the most part. So it's really an important position to be in, I think. And we thank the board for allowing us to do this work, but it also puts pressure on us to sometimes make decisions that are not fun to do. So anyway, that's my comment. Lynn?
I would like to defer comments today, but I'm not going to. I thought about it, and I thought, what if I could be brief? So I'm going to be brief. There, a lot of what's in this packet is traditional January stuff, the just approving a schedule for the coming year. That's something I learned that, you know, a couple years ago that we need to be doing. So that's a January thing. And then also in January, we've typically presented the bylaws through a series of, I'm sure it's a super fascinating story if anyone wants to hear it offline. I accidentally ended up in Open Meetings Act training through the state, which is like a little bit different presentation. Maybe it's the one you all do. And noticed that there were some changes to Open Meetings Act that were not included in our bylaws because I was preparing the bylaws at the same time. Then Ms. Stephanie Howard Gallo went through it with me, and so we're not just presenting you the bylaws for information as we traditionally would do in January, but we're also asking for some updates to bring it more fully into line with changes in Open Meetings Act, changes in the DD statute, and changes at the county level because of the clarification of the executive structure and what that means to this board. So, sorry. Anyway, then other than that, tradition in January is to maybe have taken December off and therefore be presenting you with a lot of other stuff, a lot of information. Maybe, like, our favorite thing of the year is to present you with information about what agencies are doing. So the one of the first items today will be a presentation on a new program. And that's really it. The rest of it is updates. So, okay. And then, well, there's some tough decisions too, but that's
right.
That's also standard. Okay.
Okay. Approval of meeting minutes is next on the list. We need a motion and a second.
You go. I'll motion to approve the board minutes.
I'll second. Okay, any other conversation on that?
In the who was attending the meeting, so Ann is listed twice. I should be listed as the second person.
Oh, second, okay. Ann. That's a rare omission.
Rare.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I've never had to, so yeah.
Anne, you made such an impact on us.
Okay, we will make that correction then.
You weren't here.
Yeah. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
So are we amending the minutes?
Yes, we are amending. Okay. With the amendment, yes.
Yes. Aye.
Any opposed? No.
I hand wrote you in.
All right. Vendor invoice lists. We need to accept those. We'll need a motion.
So moved.
Okay. I'll second that. Any comments or changes needed? Okay. Very good. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Staff reports are in the packet.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Could I ask... Who seconded?
I did.
Oh, thank you, Vicki.
Any questions or comments on the staff reports? We don't need to vote on that. I always appreciate the work that the staff does, for sure. I had actually one question for Kim. Is Kim in here?
She'll probably be back in.
Okay, all right. I'll save it until after the meeting then. Next thing up, new business mid-year progress report starting on page 30. And this is the Community Life Short-Term Assistance Program from the Regional Planning Commission. Good morning.
Good morning. So Jessica's on Zoom and is going to share the presentation.
Oh, so do we want to just come back to it then? Is that?
You can probably do.
No, I think she's going to share it.
Oh, she's on already.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, she's on there.
Good morning. Am I okay to share my screen?
Yeah, thank you for asking.
Can everyone see okay?
It's very tiny, but I've got
it. Looks good. Thank you.
Okay. Take it away, Angela.
I know.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm presenting on our Community Life Short-Term Assistance Program. We just say CLSTA, sort of, for short. Jessica, you can go ahead and progress the slide. Okay, I can't even see my own slide. For this program, the purpose of the CLSTA program, is to provide financial assistance along with supportive services to address needs and desires of individuals with intellectual disabilities, as well as furthering community life, socialization opportunities with friends and family, opportunities for leisure and travel, educational advancement, opportunities, as well as increasing their independence and or improving their overall well-being in direct relation to their physical or mental health. This program aligns with the board's priority for short-term supports by providing financial assistance along with supportive services to address needs and desires of furthering community life for adults with IDD. And we also, through this program, can provide brief support services to help supplement the funding that's available. So we have a short-term, we call her a short-term case manager or coach. If someone needs assistance to learn maybe like how to use the technology that they're purchasing, or skills, you know, whether it's, you know, they want to get out in the community more, but they need to work on increasing their social skills, things like that. Jessica? So qualifications for the program, the individual must be a Champaign County resident, have a diagnosis of intellectual or developmental disability and be on the PUNS list, and be at least 18 years of age or older and have exited school services, and they must meet household income guidelines at or below 60% of the annual median income. And for that, we do take into account all individuals living in the home. So I want to say there's been some updates since we made the PowerPoint. So we did issue, we did write a contract amendment, and it was approved. So we will be also taking applications for the program for individuals who receive Medicaid waiver funding. We believe that it will, one, help us to reach a greater population of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, but also we're finding that those individuals clearly, I believe, are much more in need when we're looking at individuals with, financial constraints. So we have people living in SILAs who up until this year were only, I think, getting like $60 from their monthly benefits. You know, now it's $100. Or I think a lot of people in Medicaid waiver may be living on their own with their home-based support funding. And so that makes it, you know, more financially difficult. So some of our referrals have been down. We've had a lot of people calling who are already in the waiver. Other people, I feel like some of our referrals are probably down because they're living at home, and with family income, they're not meeting those financial guidelines. So we really felt like in order to if we want there to be some financial guidelines to help meet some of the individuals with IDD who are in that category who really need it most, that we need to open it up. So outreach, some of the outreach that we did for this program is that all the individuals that I know of who were on PUNS as of when we transitioned out of being an ISE agency, so that was, you know, July 1st of 2023, I still have that list. So I sent out flyers on the program to them. We've also provided flyers to Prairie Land Service Coordination, also to the providers here in Champaign County as well, and we've offered to provide presentations on the program. So what has been funded so far? So I've just used some initials for privacy, but Client J was funded for a new bed after we learned that he'd been sleeping on this floor for over 2 years. So this is someone that we were seeing ongoing for our PCP case management program, but we never realized that he didn't have a bed. We always met with him in his living room, but the case manager happened to get there a little early one day and realized that he had this like kind of makeshift bed made up on his floor. And so after talking with him, she realized that he didn't have a bed and hadn't had one. So we were able to fund him for a new bed and a new 7-piece bedding set. And so, you know, we asked him, you know, how has this affected you? He let us know that, of course, now he's sleeping much more comfortably. He wasn't sure, you know, if it really impacted his physical health or mental health overall, but he has said that he's had less aches and pains and, you know, is sleeping better. So the next one, if I can turn my page, is Client M. And she had just gotten out of a few months earlier out of a nursing home where she was admitted originally, I believe, for long term and had some bad experiences in the nursing home and was ready to get back out into the community where she was actually very capable of living on her own with some supports. And so she moved into an apartment but reported that it still didn't really feel like her own. She'd been in a nursing home, had to share rooms at one point, I believe, with like 3 people, and was really, you know, wanting to make her place feel personalized and like her own. So she wanted to make it cozier and just her own space. And so she received, you know, she asked for a variety of things to do this. And when I asked her how these items helped impact her life, she reported that her positive affirmation signs helped her with positive thinking each day. She got a clock radio, and she said that allows her to listen to country music and that this is calming for her when she's upset. She got a water filtration system, which she said enables her to drink more water, and it helps her to be healthier physically. And she also got an iPad, which helps her to become more independent. With the help of Community Choices, inclusive community support program, she was learning how to check her email and how to schedule her own volunteer shifts as well. So the next thing that we worked on was a honeymoon trip. It was actually the couple's second anniversary. However, they hadn't ever had an anniversary, or I'm sorry, a honeymoon, and that's something they always wanted to take. And so they initially talked about going to Florida, to Universal, and then they thought about, I think, Georgia, and then they decided they wanted to stay a little bit closer because they had never traveled, just the two of them. And so they settled on St. Louis. So this is Carrie and Caleb. They gave us permission to use names and their photos. So this is a picture. Oh, can you go back, Jessica? Okay. This was them waiting on the bus to come pick them up. So they took the Greyhound bus for their trip there. They expressed while they were waiting that they were nervous and that they were excited. Go ahead, Jessica. You can advance it. They reported that it was a long ride each way. The seats weren't the most comfortable. You can go ahead. They worked with our short-term case manager to learn how to use Uber and get around on their own when they were over there. So they went to St. Louis from October 23rd to October 27th. They stayed at the Drury Inn at the Union Station. While they were there, they reported that the hotel staff were very friendly. Their first night there, they enjoyed the 5:30 kickback at the hotel and the food and drinks. And then at some point during their stay, the hotel staff also surprised them with a bottle of they said sparkling wine. I think it was like sparkling grape juice and a card for their anniversary. And they were really excited. I think they called probably all their support people to tell us about that. Because I know we were like texting each other like, oh, hey, they just called. They got and they were like, oh, I already heard they called us. So they were really excited that they got that. So Carrie was also sending us pictures that she took. These were a couple of the photos she took from Union Station the first night of the trip. And what's interesting is it just seemed like we had Tierra, who does our short-term case management, also like was working with them on like setting a really like an itinerary, so they knew kind of where to go, because we worked on purchasing gift cards for dinners. You know, we got the Uber gift cards so that they could get around, and it didn't take long for them to like be like, we're gonna go do this and kind of go off the itinerary. And you could just see like as they went like just getting more confident, and so that was really cool too to see. So on the second day of the trip, that was their actual anniversary, they did a riverboat cruise and went up in the Arch and they watched a documentary movie while they were there. And then they had dinner at Martin's Steakhouse. They said their favorite part of that day was the riverboat cruise. So they got you can go ahead, Jessica. For the steakhouse, they had a $150 gift card for their anniversary dinner, and they were so excited about their dinner. Caleb said that he had the lobster mac and cheese, and I had to ask Carrie twice what she had, and she said that she had mashed potatoes with sour cream. So I don't know if she ordered anything else or not, but that was all she told me. But she was very happy about her mashed potatoes. And then the restaurant also gave them free bread pudding for their dessert, so they were really excited about that for their anniversary. And they reported that this was their favorite place to eat at during the whole trip. So, and then the next day, they went to the aquarium at Union Station. They felt like this place was really cool. They rode the virtual train there at the aquarium, which they really liked. They had the Super 6 ticket package, so they were able to do the Mirror Maze, Selfie Express. They could ride the wheel if they wanted, and the carousel, and they could do mini golf. And then in the evening, they had a $100 gift card for Landry's Seafood House. And then they were also excited that they got free cheesecake for their anniversary there as well. So they were getting all kinds of good stuff. And then the last full day there, they went to Build-A-Bear and made a stuffed bear together. And then they were off to the zoo where they had adventure passes so they could, you know, do the theater, the sea lion show, sea lions, and ride the railway if they wanted to. And they reported that the favorite part of the zoo was the Marianne Lee butterfly wing. So some trip takeaways for them. They reported that they had increased their knowledge and skills and ability to take part in trips and vacations. They reported that they have more confidence in their ability to plan and take trips and vacations. And Carrie reported that she had fun. Caleb said it was peaceful and relaxing and that he is ready to do it again. They're actually already, like, planning. They're wanting to apply next fiscal year, and they're already saying they're ready to go to the Dells. So they are ready to go. At the end of second quarter, we were, for clients who didn't need short-term coaching, we had only funded two people, and just some of the statistics from our surveys were that, you know, 100% of people felt respected during funding and that they felt everyone was helpful and friendly. And we had, for TPC clients, one, which was the husband and wife, we were able to just put all the funding under one person. And this is why we started looking at opening up the funding so that we could expand. So since then, I know I have more to the presentation, but since that time, we've been able to buy a prom dress for someone for the Night to Shine prom. And we're working on getting her dress altered now, and she wanted to get her hair, I know that they do their hair at the prom, but she wanted to do it a special way, so she's getting her hair done at a salon, and she wanted her nails done a special way, so she's getting her nails done before they go. We've also purchased a washer and dryer for a single mom, because she was having difficulty just with being able to keep up with the household chores and then having to have someone like always have to watch her. I think he's maybe two, maybe not quite two yet. Anytime she needed to run out and do laundry. So we were able to get that purchased. And I'm currently working on a gym membership for somebody. The other thing that's up next, if you want to go ahead and flip the slides, Jessica. So we are currently starting to work on planning a trip for a couple to Chicago. We are hoping to start some purchases within the next couple weeks. They're really excited. They want to go to, the wife wants to go to a Cubs game. The husband wants to go to a Sox game. So we've been able to find a weekend where there's a Cubs White Sox game. So we're trying to get them tickets for that game. So hopefully that will all work out. Next one, Jessica. And then this is just an example. This isn't the exact dress that we found. I have a picture of it, but the girl, her hair wasn't done, her makeup. I don't think she'd want me to share that picture. I'm hoping to get pictures of it when she's at prom and then be able to share more. But so that's a picture. I already talked ahead on this one, but that's similar to the dress that she purchased. So just some successes was being able to develop the new program. You know, we were able to meet with CCAMR and establish a working relationship, and just begin to fund some new requests and items and figure out our process. It wasn't without its bumps and kinks, so that's been, you know, a learning experience. And challenges is just, you know, as I said, finding people that meet some of those eligibility guidelines. And, you know, there were some delays in the funding process overall for various reasons. And some of that was just figuring out our process and working out those kinks. I had put in here on the next slide, potential ways to improve the program was to open up the funding to Medicaid waiver individuals, which we are now able to do, which I'm very excited about. And then just that we are taking referrals and happy to get people in. So any questions? Sorry, that was a lot of rambling from me.
It was not rambling. It was great information, Angela. Thank you.
Thanks.
Have you rejected any requests? And if so, let's start from the beginning. How many requests total have you received? And have there been any of those that were rejected?
So off the top of my head, I would say official applications that I've gotten, we haven't had to deny anyone. Mm-hmm. But I have had calls, like informal inquiries, that when they've called, they haven't met the requirements. Some were, at least two of those were Medicaid waiver. So I had to say, like, at that point that we weren't able to right. fulfill any request. And then I would say I got at least three calls from families who had individuals or children that they were hoping to get funding for. Mm-hmm. So they were under the age of 18. As far as applications, like I said, all applications we've been able to fund or are in the process of funding. The washer and dryer and the washer and dryer I initially sent on to CCAMR to review. There was a breakdown in communication, which happened on my end. And so that didn't get processed within this last quarter review mm-hmm. for them. And so we wanted to go ahead and fund that on her behalf because she had been waiting. And then I do have someone who also I forwarded on in that same time period that was a furniture request.
Okay. And so if they're rejected through CCAMR, then you will reconsider
yes.
those applications.
Yes. So if we'll forward them on if there's like not a time urgency. So if someone like for the prom, that was something that someone was needing right away. Mm-hmm. So we went ahead and funded that right away. You know, if it's someone needs something, but it's not, you know, they don't need it within the next couple months, there's no urgency, then we would forward that on for consideration.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how much money actually went into stipends for the folks that you have funded so far, roughly?
Oh, goodness.
No, you don't have a budget sitting in front of you, but.
I would say, let me go back and look to see. It's up to $3,000 per person, but we haven't hit mm-hmm. that with everybody. I know.
St. Louis trips looks like it maybe came close
it was,
to it.
Yeah, it was closer. I would say. Oh, gosh. I don't know. Jessica, let me know what you think. I would probably say maybe around 6,000 at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that sounds close. And we can definitely follow up with information once we can kind of look back at our tracking sheet. But that sounds in the neighborhood.
And are you using staff time to make all these arrangements? Like it sounded like when the St. Louis trip that you were pretty integrally involved in, you know, helping them to acquire tickets to different events and so forth.
Yeah. So we are helping with that. If the person is comfortable with doing that, then absolutely. Like for JAH that's doing the prom stuff, she reached out to make her own appointments for hair, nails, and just let me know where those were. Mm-hmm. But the St. Louis trip, we were definitely much more involved. Like we spoke with individuals, we found out where they wanted to go, and then did research on, okay, what's in that area. And then I know like when Tiara was working with them, she tried to group the things together that they wanted to do so that they weren't like running across town back and forth. So trying to group, okay, today you want to do these things in this area, you wanted a steak dinner on this day for your anniversary. Let's look for the steakhouse in that area. On this day, you wanted to do the zoo. What are the other things that are in that area? So we were pretty hands-on with that. And then also just like with making up the itinerary and, you know, sending like reminders and things like that. And we did do like just check, you know, daily check-ins when they were there as well, just to make sure things were going well.
Yeah. Anything else? I just have one more comment. I'm really glad that you're taking on people who are funded through the Medicaid waiver, because they're not exactly rolling in cash.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
thank you for that.
That will be a big benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to share an update. I was able to pull up our fiscal report, and it looks like we've funded about 4,278 thus far.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Kim. Got the name wrong. Sorry. Okay, moving on to the next item on the list, and that is notification of funding availability. That's just information only in the packet. The notification was posted for 2 days, as I understand it. Next thing up are the bylaws, the revised bylaws starting on page 62. And we need a vote to accept the new revision. Thank you.
Motion to approve the bylaws as in the packet.
And I'll second that. Now, discussion on that.
My only comment is I've read a lot of bylaws over the years, and this is the most shortest, to the point,
I
easiest
noted that
to read bylaws. I was impressed.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
You are the board. If you would like more complexity.
No.
That was supposed to be a compliment.
It was a compliment, definitely.
Again, like another super fascinating story for another time is how I came to show this to the state's attorney's civil division chief, who gave me some feedback and like, you know, it's all good. So it's kind of nice to have that assurance, too. Usually Stephanie Howard Gallo gets it right. It was nice to have another person affirm that she got it right, as always. But he did. He asked me, like, if you wanted to put other things in there, you could, like expectations. And so anyway, I invite you to think of that. You're going to see these again in January, no matter what you do now. You'll see them again next January, but it's your bylaws. So our goal was to update them to match other prevailing laws and ordinances.
Go for it.
Okay, so thanks, Lynn and Stephanie. First, thanks for the highlights. Like, it's just really nice to, you know, because track changes you can't put on in the PDF. So thank you. It's really easy to follow of what needs to be changed. So on page or item 2D, where it says any member of the CCDDB may be removed by the appointing officer, period. And it struck very important, like, specific
those,
information. Why?
So those terms would apply in any of the other 101 counties in the state of Illinois. They do not apply here because we have an executive form of government. The details of the authority of the executive were worked out over a series of maybe 4 or 5 years in court. And the appointing officer, which is the county executive, can remove someone for any reason. Like, they, you know, I know, it's weird, but, and I think the current county executive would never do that, but this is where we're at. And, you know, those things also change, so we'll see. Anyway.
So essentially there's nothing we can do about that, which is what I was my understanding. But I just wanted to note that is at the will of the executive, anybody from our board could be removed for any reason.
What you could do about it is exercise your right as a citizen or as an appointed official and talk to the county board or the county executive about decisions that you either saw coming or, you know, in the rear view you find, unfair. And I think you can even reach out to people before something like that happens. Yeah.
That was kind of a surprise.
I mean, I understood.
You've got it on record now.
What I appreciate, though, that it's simple, that, you know, there are processes in place that could help resolve that if it became an issue, but I have served on several boards of directors where the bylaws were 20 pages long because every time they had an issue, they would write into the bylaws how they're going to fix this issue, and it just keeps getting more and more complicated.
Any issue
that comes up before the board, they think, well, we'll put this in, you know, let's put policy in the bylaws to alleviate this as a concern later on. But then you get into a situation where everything becomes so complex that you're trying to make decisions. Oh, you can't do that because of Section 4, you know, letter D or, you know, whatever it is. It doesn't allow that to happen. So it becomes very complex. But, yeah, the shortness of it is really great. Any other comments?
Yeah. So just on record, I just want to say that not that we can do anything about it, but I would disagree with that, you know, that statement.
Yeah. I don't think we have anything to fear about it personally, but you never know. You never know.
Everything can change overnight.
That's true. Just sometimes does.
We really know that. And this whole thing started with the item on page 65, under, what is that, 3F. This is all because of a change in the Open Meetings Act, which allows for a fourth category of allowing virtual attendance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, just to kind of affirm you, Vicki, the operating environment for the work of the DD board and the work of the mental health board is so chaotic. And even though, you know, we seem to be fighting the same stubborn barriers for decades and decades, the operating environment can change really fast too. And the regulations under which we're operating can change. So the idea of keeping these sort of like, you're adding as little as possible to the existing structure, I think helps us keep track of the existing structures.
Yes.
Okay.
Totally agree. Okay, so any other comments on that? Otherwise, we just need to take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 And no opposed. Okay, very good. Moving on to page 2 of the agenda.
Oh.
Relocation of staff offices. So the mental health board folks, Lynn and company, are requesting moving to a new location out of this building. You want to talk a little bit, just summarize what we're voting on here?
Basically, the opportunity is probably time limited because there's another department who would like these spaces. We didn't see the spaces until yesterday, and I think Kim and Chris are both really good at keeping it brief, and they were there, so they might like to speak to this. But
okay.
I wanted to get approval from both boards to just generally plan to go. You know, there's going to be budget implications anyway, but if we don't leave and we end up having to leave at the end of the year, those budget implications are still there. It's not, you know, there's never going to be anything cheaper than what we have right now, unless we had no office at all, which would...
That'd be a little challenging. Yeah.
We have to pick up the mail somewhere minimally. So everything is going to cost more next year. But for the other options beyond just moving with the rest of the county, we would need to engage in some processes around renting or purchasing. And either way, there'd be more money involved and mm-hmm. there'd be more time on the topic. So the first thing was to find out, what is the space? Like, is it even acceptable to the people who would have to be there all the time? And so if it's okay to let them speak to that?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, sure.
All right.
Well, first, do you guys have any questions about what we saw yesterday?
What did it look like?
So it was, so it's the old County Plaza building, which previously was pretty outdated and run down, but they've done a really great job of renovating it, remodeling it. So the space that we looked at was very nice, actually really, really nice. Every office that would be available has lovely windows for everyone, so that's really nice. We would potentially, there's a few different things that we would have to sort out, but we would have room for our files and all of the things that we would need to bring. So I think that I was impressed. I was pleased with the opportunity to go look at it and the potential to move there. So. And there's also on the first floor, which will be the new Shields Carter room. So regardless of where we end up, that's where board meetings will be. So that's going to be a really nice space. It obviously wasn't done yet, but we would, if we do go there, we're still just a little few steps away or an elevator ride away from the meeting space. So mm-hmm. convenience also.
So you're anticipating toward the end of the year?
I think possibly. Summer or fall.
Summer or fall. And, okay.
But we would probably have to leave Brookins by the end of the year, if that's mm-hmm. my understanding. So.
So we need a motion and a second.
Chris might have.
Oh, Chris, yes.
I want to second everything Kim said. The area that we would be in is nice, fresh carpet, fresh paint, fresh drywall. Everything was really well done. The only thing that I would add is that there will be extra security for us as staff. The only access into that area is by badge. So I just wanted to add that.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have one more thing?
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing is the bathroom is really close.
That was great. Okay. All right. We need a motion and a second to approve this.
So moved.
I'll second.
All right.
Do you mind reading the motion?
Oh, we have a motion to read.
I'm sorry. I can put it up on the screen again. Page 68.
I move to approve relocation of staff offices to the Scott M. Bennett Administrative Center and to authorize the executive director to terminate the current lease and enter a new one with the county, pending staff assessment of the space and contingent on approval by the Champaign County Mental Health Board.
Thank you.
And I'll second, but can we have just so I have another question.
Oh, of course. Go for it.
Okay. Just has there been any discussion about like the accessibility of the space and making sure that I'm sure it's compliant with like the
it's
ADA.
New construction.
So it has to be compliant.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I'm sorry, I don't want to jump in. That is the reason it's taken so much longer than they planned originally. But do you guys want to speak to that? Okay. Chris, do you want?
Well, the meeting room where we would be doing these meetings is on the first floor, so presumably that's ADA compliant. As for our offices, they're accessible by elevator, so I don't see an issue there.
I thought the hallways looked quite wide, which is really important, too, and maybe better than the hallways we have right now. I'm not sure. But it just, I have a lot of people come in, and that our current space feels a little clunky getting people in and out, and this one, I'm just imagining a larger wheelchair and thinking this would go okay. But the elevator, if there's not a functioning elevator, it's not accessible at all. It's three flights of stairs. So, we had a really nice space over here that because we needed to be able to get up to the second floor, and the elevator was broken. So I'm a little superstitious about elevators now. So
yeah, I guess I'm just wondering if you ever have, you know, staff who might need, yeah, accessible spaces or a meeting room, you know, and you have folks coming in, just making sure that that is available somewhere, I'm sure, in the building. But, yeah. So.
All right. Let's vote on the decision then. Mic went off again. All those in favor say aye.
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 And no opposed. Very good. Moving on to E, input from people with IDD.
Can I say?
So we are just going to have this as a regular. This is something that came up at our last meeting, mm-hmm, when we were talking about the strategic plan, like how do you get input from people with IDD should not be the question. It should be, it's always
what
an agenda item. So then we'll see what happens. And right, like 2 days ago, I got some really good input. But then we decided we'll save it for you till February. Yeah, no, it's great. And then, so, but like, it also, as just an agenda item, this could be an opportunity for you all to share things that you have heard,
mm-hmm,
too, just verbal, you know. I think that's okay, too. Okay.
Yeah, very good. Old business, response to emerging threats. This was kind of your issue, wasn't it, Kim?
Yeah, yes, it was. So thanks for putting it on. So I guess I just want to, you know, with the recent executive orders threatening community members who are immigrants, I know that the National Education Association provided a really nice information packet for educators on how to address issues of ICE or CBP coming in to spaces to try to deport residents in the community. But part of that guidance was addressed that the Biden administration had identified safe spaces, so schools and community centers, churches or other religious places of worship were identified as safe spaces, and as of yesterday, they are no longer safe spaces in Trump's President Trump's executive order. So I know that in education, we're talking to staff, school bus drivers, paras, educators, about the, you know, in the college classroom about this, and educating staff of what they can do should this happen, should ICE or CBP come in to try and take people. And so I guess I just want to put out there what are we doing as a county, what is maybe push back in the county board of having some guidance for what we're doing at the county to address this, as well as maybe, you know, talking with agencies about, you know, should they be places where this happens, what to do. So, and they haven't even addressed HHS or, mm-hmm, I mean, that's like a direct threat to the folks that we particularly serve. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that because we, you know, whether you're undocumented or documented, you're a Champaign-Con resident, so. Anyways, so I guess I'll just keep bringing this up. I'm not, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe we need to have a conversation with members of the county board, and there should be some kind of working group to address these issues. But
and there may be something happening through the governor's office as well, which we don't know about. So that would be good information to have as well.
The county board meets tomorrow night. That's the regular board meeting. So I know you watch them. I watch them too. I'm usually at home though watching. Do you come to them?
No, but it's funny you should say that because I was thinking about maybe that I should publicly speak about it. Or yeah, bring it up. Yeah.
They might be appointing a liaison to this board. I'm not sure. I don't think they've identified someone yet, but maybe the chair of the county board is going to be the liaison. So that might be an interesting thing for us to tune into as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know, like I mentioned this before in November, like the LA City Council back in November the LA City Council said that they are put an ordinance that you can't spend any city resources or county resources on any of this immigration activity. So, you know, that's maybe that's something that the county should look to. Again, I know to Ann's point last time, like, you know, what can we do here as a board? But I really believe that we have to not obey in advance and protect people.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say there was also an executive order yet late last night about dismantling DEI mm-hmm. Programs, so diversity, equity, inclusion. And when I was reading the Reuters, I haven't studied that as much, but I read the Reuters news article. But so that is something that we should look to. One of the things that the administration is doing is putting federal workers who are in charge of DEI programs at the federal government on paid leave. Also, the administration has requested that agencies identify up to 9 medical associations, nonprofits, or institutes of higher ed who have DEI programs but maybe don't necessarily receive federal funding to see if they are going against discrimination laws by implementing DEI programs. So again, and in the classification that their administration said was DEI categories were gender identity, race, but they didn't include disability. So I wondered how that would impact some of our the employment programs that we support as a organization. Anyways, it's a lot. You know, then there's the gender identity executive order, which is harmful to many of the people that we support. So, sorry. I'm going to keep bringing it up. So.
How did you keep up with all of that?
Just a lot of reading. So I have to, I mean, I teach this to future educators or current educators. So we have to talk about it in class and how we're going to protect children and families. So.
I have to interrupt. There's a Subaru with plates Q607. If that's anybody in here, we need to talk. We need to go talk to someone. Is that anybody here? Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Engage Illinois is next on the agenda. I actually attended an online meeting with this group on Monday, and so I can tell you, they've got new energy, and they have. I was a little discouraged the first few months of the effort because we had a meeting last May, and it was a couple of months, and nothing in my estimation had happened at all. We are now meeting twice a week, and we have opted to, instead of running to the governor with proposed legislation right away, we've decided it's a good idea to start building the coalition. So we're going to be doing trainings for parents, providers, all those folks around the state, probably mostly on Zoom, but at least reaching out to people, helping get them engaged in the effort so that the systems change can have more impact when we can present a petition of thousands of signatures of parents and people to the governor saying these folks back this effort and we need to do something. They were going to request a task force to be assigned to study rates for home-based support services to see if we could make those more flexible. That's on hold for right now because we don't want to do anything that's going to get, you know, rejected out of hand. We want to take our time and really do it well. So anybody who's interested in joining the Engage Illinois or staying informed, you can go to justadollop.org. They are going to be developing their own website, but temporarily, JustADollop is what they're using as their base for information. So that's all I have. Any questions on that? Okay, evaluation capacity.
I'm so sorry. I have to run to clinic. I apologize for leaving early.
Oh, sorry you have to go. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, I'll try and work out so I can be here for the entire meeting. But thank you guys. So.
Okay, thank you. All right, evaluation capacity building project update. Do we have a member of the TO in person? Awesome.
Good morning. Hello, everyone. We're excited to report that since we last spoke with you, we had a training on a measures repository that had been created in the past and that we've added a few measures to and worked with agency representatives who were interested in learning more about outcomes and how to measure outcomes, how to find measures, how to use this repository. And we're also talking with agencies that might have more individual or more specific needs about how we might be able to identify additional measures or assist them in developing measures that are useful and relevant to their clients. So that's exciting. So yay for moving forward with outcomes and measuring them and making sure that the most relevant outcomes are being measured for the agencies. We also have finished almost, it will be posted later this week, our series, micro learning series on logic models. So we have very small segments on inputs and outputs and outcomes and try to break it down in a way that is really accessible to others. And we also have a bit longer video on an agency that worked with me to actually develop their own logic model in less than 40 minutes. Using sticky notes and making it really more grounded and available to other people. So we're hoping that these micro learnings will be useful not only to agencies, but also board members who want to learn about them. And we can showcase a few of them as we go through these board meetings if we want to, because they're pretty short, most of them. So we've also been continuing our technical assistance with the selected agencies, and that has been going really, really well. And we've just been really hard at work and trying to move the work forward. So that's our update.
Thanks. Okay. Any questions, comments? Very quiet board today. Thank you so much for your for the information shared.
Thank you.
Resource Expo update. There's a packet information in the packet. Is there any? Any observation or questions regarding that?
Yes, my observation is this was an excellent document. Mm-hmm. And I just want to thank the presenters for putting together a really, not only an excellent expo, but a really good document to say what worked well, what didn't work well, and accountability is just superior.
Yeah, a lot of great data. Thanks to Allison and company for all their work on this. All right. Okay, update on late agency reports, 98.
Do you want me to start?
Yeah, so we have had discussion on issues with the CU Autism Network budget last month and lack of reports and so forth. We have a decision to make based on the decision that we came to last month. Since then, the Autism Network has submitted reports, all of the reports that requested, but there are questions on several of them, correct?
Yes.
So I don't know how we should proceed here. Do we want to?
I've been, you know, trying to use language like suggested actions, especially when I get into a jam. This is, the suggested actions are on page 104, but before you put either of those motions on the table, I want to just do a little brief. This is really, truly a good news, bad news situation. That the good news is everybody did what they were supposed to do from your meeting as instructed in November through January 8th and even a little bit of follow-up afterwards. The bad news is we are not able to make any determination regarding whether the funds were used appropriately or how much. I mean, I think we can say some of the funds were actually used according to the contracts appropriately, but there are also things in the contracts like around keeping track of activities and keeping track of money in a certain way that allows us to understand what happened with the money. And the reports as they are a little bit confusing to us. So we can't really say how much money might be owed back. And even in a normal situation, we would not say that until we've seen the audit at that, you know, after the fact. But there are problems with both of those things. So everybody did what they were supposed to, but it didn't get us to the moment of certainty that I think we all wanted. That's So I'm only presenting suggestions because I'm not really sure what's the right thing to do next, or even if you should do anything today. So.
Okay. That said, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I have two things to say that are just sort of background philosophy. How I see what the purpose of this board is and how I look at my work on this board, that there are two things. One is, as Vicki said in her remarks, we have the fiduciary responsibility for a significant amount of taxpayer funds. And as I see it, the focus of this board is to make sure that those funds are being used appropriately, and that includes accountability for the use of the funds. And we spend a lot of time in these meetings looking at how funds are used, what services are being provided, how many people are being served, et cetera. And that's something that this organization just fell down on. The other thing that is important for this board is to be advocates for all activities for people with IDD in our community. And all of us on this board have very strong personal feelings and association with IDD needs, and we understand that the needs are extreme. And we also understand that everybody out in the community, and I mean everybody who is working with IDD people, has the best heart. They really are doing good work. They're doing hard work. And we understand as a board that it's difficult for the smaller agencies, and that includes DD and Mental Health Board, to come up to the standards of reporting that are really required for fiduciary responsibility. So we're always treading this fine line. And I've been on the Mental Health Board and the DD Board for many years, and I've seen this over and over and over. It's the small agencies that have the most difficulty. For example, an audit is more expensive than most agencies, small agencies, can do. And just knowing how to keep records may be difficult. Now, our evaluation capacity program might be helpful in that. And I know staff have been very helpful in instructing people how to report to us, the board. But it's still difficult for small agencies. So that's my philosophical, when I look at a situation like this, and there are other situations, that's how I look at it. Anything else?
Yeah, I guess The way I read this is that we need more information, right?
If you are asking us as staff to make a determination, like our original determination was send the money back, don't worry about an audit, let's just, you know, just nullify the contract, and that, you know, I'm grateful for the opportunity to learn so much instead of doing that, so this is not wasted time. But it may be wasted time for you or for the agency if there's not a different conclusion. But we are not able to make any determination of exact amounts or certainty. Like, I think we can get really close, but we can't talk about amounts that might be owed back. You are absolutely right. An audit is very expensive, and not just more expensive if you're a large and complicated organization, but more expensive if your fundamental financial records are not in order. I mean, the Mental Health Board is still waiting for an audit from PY22 because the records were in poor order despite a great deal of time and training and bookkeeping and accountant support. So we really do understand that this is hard. So if you want staff to make any kind of recommendation, we would need more information. You might not want more information. The other issue around their audit, right now they're only required to do a financial review. We understood their fiscal year to be January 1 through December 31. So if you want information about what they might have done with this money from January 1 of 2024 through June 30th, that was the original intent of the contracts, the audit wouldn't cover it. The financial review wouldn't cover the full period. So if the agency doesn't really have a fiscal year and they don't care, maybe the financial review could be from July 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2024. But we still would have some difficulty understanding what happened if we have a financial review versus an audit, and an audit is not, I don't know if it's reasonable. I think there are representatives here we could ask those questions of. But those are the two things that we could offer based on conversations after the reports were submitted and reviewed. There might be information about that second six-month period that would help to understand everything about that. We could see some of these activities taking place.
So are you saying that if we extend this reporting to the third and fourth quarter, that it might show more expenditures that apply to this grant than we have seen to date? Okay.
But problematically, it would not be included in the financial review that they're required to do, because that was for the period that ends December 31st. So
this would be strictly for determining if and how much money would have to be returned to the board?
So we are not, we usually wait until we have the audit or financial review in order to determine that. So this is really, again, like, I mean, if I'm making it clear what we're dealing with, these are maybe a series of decisions for you to consider, you know, like further exceptions. I don't know. I'm sorry that I really hoped that we could give you like a total answer, and everybody tried. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm confused about the time frame. There's fiscal year this, fiscal year that. Can we nail down what time frame we're looking at for this agency?
This agency has used a calendar year for fiscal year, which means their audit would be from January 1 of some year to December 31st of that year. So our contracts are issued on July 1 to June 30th, which means we can't fully understand. We're only dealing with two agencies in the whole Mental Health Board and DD Board portfolio. Only two have that fiscal year difference. But that alone makes it very difficult for us to figure out how much money might be owed back. So if the agency is not committed to that fiscal year, and they could switch and have their financial review or audit done on the July 1 through June 30th basis, then that could capture all of the contract year. So instead of having to do two audits.
Right. So the fourth quarter of fiscal year 2024 ended on June 30th, right? So they would be reporting from January through June 30th.
Of 2024. Because this lists 2023 multiple times.
That's because they did the contracts were for July 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2024. So there are quarterly reports for the first quarter that's July 1 through September 30th, and then for the second quarter, which is October 1 through December 31st. And that's all we asked for because we stopped paying after that point, but we have learned that they continued to use that money to support activities which may or may not be described in those contracts, which were originally termed for the full year of July 1 through December 31. I know I'm making... Do you have better words, Chris? You're really good at teaching people about this. And I'm not, I'm sorry. But the contract year is called PY24, so that may be also confusing, but anyway.
Okay, so I think what we're talking about is July 1, 2023 through December 31, 2023, where money was dispersed to this agency and they did not provide any documentation of how it was spent, and nothing has been given to them in 2024.
Right.
Okay, so I just wanted to be really clear on that because I wasn't.
Right.
Okay.
I get that. So I guess we have two options before us here. Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
So can staff provide, I'm just looking at like the staff opinions, what's our statutory responsibility again, right? I mean, our number one statutory responsibility making sure that the public money was spent as it was appropriated?
Well, we could look at the statute now. It's quite long, and it's a lot preoccupied with how to introduce a referendum, to establish a DD board, with the operation of facilities, with recouping money through the state's attorney's office if it was used for someone who doesn't live in the county or who had financial means. Those are the main preoccupations of the statute. It's also, we're prohibited from using any money. Any DDB funds for anything that's covered under the school code, Article 14. And then on top of that, there are local ordinances and there are your funding requirements and guidelines, which are, it describes the procurement process, it describes appeals processes, it describes what constitutes an eligible organization and what the reporting requirements will be. And the reporting requirements are detailed there. And that's, everybody reads and signs those upon application, and they are incorporated into the contracts too. So upon signing a contract, that's also understood. So, and some of it is repeated in the contract. So if you're asking about the statute, that's important, but we've got all these other rules layered on top of that, which if you decide to create exceptions to your own local rules, I think you can, because the statute is talking about other stuff. It was written a long time ago, and its preoccupation is with buildings to put people who have IDD in. It really needs a cleanup. So
yeah, and we just approved those bylaws. So if you look back, there are functions there. which the first of which is planning for the intellectual and developmental disability service system to assure accomplishment of the CCDDB goals. And we can't do that without number four, which is the evaluation of the system of care and those reports that are submitted by our agencies that they work so diligently on. That's how we get our information. So we had no information to go by until those reports were submitted this month.
But according to the read of this memo, we continue to not have clear information about how
it's right. It's
okay.
Upon a follow-up conversation, we think it might be incomplete information because some of the money was spent in the second 6 months doing the approved activities. But to your earlier question, I just want to say, like, I've been pretty careful as we revise the funding guidelines and requirements and the contracts to give the board some authority. You can waive you can waive certain requirements. Usually we would probably hope to do that in advance, mm-hmm. so that the reasons for a waiver would be understood and fully described. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of an unusual situation for the DD board. Unfortunately, it's not unusual to the mental health board. Mm-hmm. They end up spending a lot of time considering exceptions after the fact. So I just want to share, you do have that authority. So I could look at the statute. I don't think it says, you know, when reports need to be filed or what they should consist of, but I can look.
Take your word for it.
No,
so
it doesn't.
Don't. What has these suggested actions, are these similar to what the mental health board has? Sounds like to me the mental health board has already experienced something like this. What is their precedent that they've kind of followed?
I want to say that we've not worked on anything quite like this. Every year there's a totally new situation that, you know, we dig deep and figure out how to deal with it, and that never happens again. So, you know, it's like what we're learning is problem solving skills.
And I guess, is it appropriate to ask, given the two options that have been offered by staff, we don't have a motion on the floor.
So you can have anybody talk you want.
Yes, I would like to ask whoever wants to represent CUAN to let us know what their preferences might be in resolving this issue. And I'm trying to find the page. What page is it on this?
104.
Okay, I was flipping back and forth. So the two motions that we have to consider here.
And I'm really sorry. Another thing I learned from this is that I probably can't. I mean, these guys, like, they did not provide support as directed, but they did provide support and expertise to me in the 2 days that we had to put this together, and as did Chandra. And I've learned 2 days is not enough time for me to really ponder deeply. Mm-hmm. So in the future, I might try to give us more time. But thank you both for, like, doing it so fast.
And we can adapt either of these motions as we see fit. So as they are proposed right now, the first motion is to require the CU Autism Network to submit a full audit report performed by an independent CPA firm, including supplemental information as identified in contracts. The second motion possibility is to allow CU Autism Network to submit third and fourth quarter reports to detail program activities and clarify the full year of financial transactions. Input.
Thank you.
Yes.
How's that? Steve Beckett, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you again. I appreciated the action that you took at the last meeting that gave my client the opportunity to complete reports that were woefully overdue. I think with Ms. Robbins' remarks about the two constituencies, which I think are very appropriate. I shared with you the last time that when I was on the county board, I was on the committee that was responsible for reviewing the 5% juvenile delinquency grants that came out of the quarter cent sales tax way back when. And I shared the same concern that you reflected, which is I have a fiduciary duty to the taxpayers who are paying that money to properly account for that money. But then I thought to myself, I also have a fiduciary duty to the constituents who the programs are designed for, that there be programs, that those programs be successful. And that's where I find myself. I'm here as an advocate, I admit it, but I've told you before, I'm an advocate with a purpose, because I've had personal contacts. My daughter-in-law is a special ed teacher at St. Joe. My wife is a retired teacher in both public and private schools. I have a grandson with autism spectrum and has received services from the agency. This is long-winded. I hope you'll bear with me, but I do have thoughts that I want to share with you. The CUN has an active community outreach program. I think it's reflected in the reports that you have received. They have a community of support. You know, some of the autism affected families have means, but most of them don't. Most of them need advocacy from the CUN staff. I know from talking with Julie Duvall, who's the executive director, who's here, just for example, that she attends 20 IEPs a month on behalf of autism families. And our network gets nothing for that. Zero. No revenue. No revenue. And as you saw in the paperwork and dealing with Ms. Canfield, that's not reportable. That activity is not reportable under these contracts. But it really is heart and soul of the kind of effort that is needed out there in the community, because these families, quite frankly, would be at a loss, and would just the teachers that are there and the administrators that are there, the families don't know what services that they're entitled to, and the network supports that. So anyway,
I have a concern about that, which is that there are state-funded programs to do that, to advocate, and one of them has presented to the CU Autism Network, but has never been asked to help. So somebody else is getting paid to do that work already.
Well, I understand, but the Autism Network is actually doing the work.
But this is a thing, we don't fund programs that are otherwise exist and are funded otherwise.
Right. Well, perhaps you're saying to CUAN, stop. Don't do that. Don't do that advocacy for families.
I would really advise you, Autism Network, instead to bring in the existing resources who are trained, and they actually have attorneys involved too that will do this on the state's dime instead of for free.
And I certainly will share that with the board.
Okay. Well, they have presented to CU Autism Network, right?
I believe that's what she said, yes.
All right. With respect to the motion that could be made, we would ask that we be allowed to report the expenditure funds for the third and fourth quarter. We have engaged MH, who used to be Martin Hood, that's the way I would always call them, and Tyler Cutts is the accountant who's in charge of the current, quote, financial review. I suppose you could enhance that to a full audit. Extremely expensive. I'm not sure how this agency could afford a full audit, but if that's what's necessary, that's what will be done. But in dealing with the accountants so far, The financial records, it's my understanding, disclose no improprieties. This isn't like that somebody was in the till using money in a way that, that was absolutely inappropriate. We appreciate the opportunity that the grant funding provided, and I submit that my review suggests that everybody at the agency has acted in good faith to achieve grant goals, but they actually lacked understanding and, frankly, the necessary leadership to achieve those goals. I've explained to you before why and how. I suppose this board can send messages about good faith and community good, or you could send a message that we don't accept failure and therefore there are consequences from failure and we impose those consequences. But we would like the opportunity to report those third and fourth quarter expenditures.
No, thank you for that information. I just have a clarifying question. We are not supposed to fund any activity that is for folks who receive school services, right?
Well, that's for services which the school is obligated to provide, which would include some transition planning. So we've gotten in the transition planning space, but through a different way. But otherwise, we've had schools write letters saying, we don't want to do this anymore, so you can pay for it, which is like it's illegal. So this situation of advocating for families at IEPs, this is something people do for each other all the time. But the state actually does have an organization which is paid to do that. And they have presented to CU Autism Network. They are aware. I think there's a representative who actually lives here and is quite aware of the problems of our local school districts and the need for that kind of advocacy, has not been invited to help. So it's a really separate issue. That's more like you don't fund respite because the state is paying for respite. So it's more similar to that. So, it's not a violation of the statute, but it's a duplication of effort. So,
and then just real quick, just follow up. So remind us again the two programs that were originally contracted.
Oh, also, it was not described in either of the contracts. Support at IEPs was not part. We would not have recommended that you fund that. So is the first contract is community outreach. The organization has provided a lot of evidence of activities under that, but we also knew that because their main marketing is social media, and everyone can see that it's happening. And then it's also a small world, so people talk, and those events are well attended. So I think that kind of more met expectations. The other one was there was a planning grant, which was basically, and Mr. Beckett pointed out, these are one-year goals, so to report on them in 6 months would be impossible anyway. But it didn't look like there was no evidence of the activities described in that contract, other than there was some overlap between the two contracts where they're going to survey people and learn about what they want and what they need. And so that would fall under the category that Planning C grant. The main deliverables were a progress report to you in, would have been this time last year, and then like a plan for a regional center. But first they were going to find out if a regional center was desired and what it would do and where it would be, things like that. So it was real different. I think some people were really excited to see that. But so anyway, I'm sorry. I don't know when to stop talking. Okay. I'm sorry.
Anne, did you have something?
I have two things. One is in relation to that, at the top of page 104, I had circled that the accounting structures provide accurate and complete information about all financial transactions related to each separate CCDDB contract. So what I'm understanding is that there's only one contract with COAN that's of concern, and that's the planning contract. We don't know what they did with that. The community outreach, it looks like they didn't really report on it, but
right.
We do know that they did it.
The service, on the service side, there's good evidence for that contract. The financials are still a problem because they are not organized in a way that's consistent with the contract or the funding requirements. They could be reorganized. Mm-hmm. Chris found several things, and this is, again, our last-minute dash to try to put things in writing for you, so there may be more. But, right. Thank you. Sorry.
So am I correct? It's the planning contract that we don't have evidence of activity or documentation of activity. So that's the contract that we're concerned about?
Right now we're concerned about both. Because the first one appears to be underspent, but as Mr. Becca and Ms. Forrest, they both shared with me that this is very likely because some of the money received during that first 6 months was spent later on activities and events in the spring, which is appropriate to the contract. But we didn't ask for those reports. And if we do ask for those reports, now we have a problem of what period the auditor is looking at. So you could decline to do anything about an audit right now, maybe, because if the agency is ready to provide more information and we're ready to look at it, we could just come back to you with results from that. This could take a while to figure out.
Mm-hmm. I had it on. Personally, I would rather us take our time and get this right instead of jumping into, you know, consequences right away. Anne?
Okay, so as I think we're about ready to do the motions, and I guess I see these motions as mutually exclusive. So if mm-hmm. we... No?
No.
Okay.
But they're different enough... You might amend the audit one or just skip it for now because it's easier for us to receive and look at third and fourth quarter information and bring that back to you, and then you make a decision. But they have a financial review in progress, so I don't know if there's going to be implications on their side. And just so that, like I guess what I'm getting to is, there are provisions through which you can waive requirements, such as an audit. But in this situation, the financial evidence is not very strong. Like, we can't really come to conclusions anyway. So, you know, if you had waived an audit requirement, ideally in advance, but that might be appropriate for a small family support network, we might still have a problem figuring out how much money was used and what is owed back. So this is why maybe small steps make sense. But then again,
that's kind of where I'm leaning at this point, is to delay a requirement for a full audit, let CUAN submit their last two quarterly reports and get all the information into us so that the board then, or so that the staff then, can determine mm-hmm. what still is questionable, what needs to be clarified, and all that. And I don't think we have time constraints on us to make sure that the right decision is made ultimately. I mean, this could go on for another, you know, 6 months. I hate to put that kind of pressure on CU Autism Network, but then I want to be fair to the work that they do. Anne?
I would like to move to allow CU Autism Network to submit third and fourth quarter fiscal year 2024 reports to detail program activities and clarify the full year of financial transactions.
I'll second that. Comments?
So do we have to put both motions in?
Mm-mm.
So if we say this motion, are we saying no to...
No, we're not saying anything.
Nobody has moved it.
So we could do it next month if we wanted to, or the following month. There's no...
So when you said that it was mutually exclusive, Lynn said no.
That's in my mind. But I'm not moving to... I'm not moving for an audit. I have not said that. So according to my understanding of Robert's rules, there's a motion on the floor right now about the financial transactions, and that's what my motion was. And it's been seconded, so we're discussing that. We can discuss the audit one if somebody moves it, but I'm not doing that.
So are these motions mutually exclusive?
I would say so.
No.
Why not?
Because I don't think an audit, and actually Mr. Beckett was going to say something, I don't think there's a point to doing an audit of a different period from, if the agency wants to, I mean, right, they're sort of mutually exclusive, but really not. Like you could say, you could do both things, but if you do both things, then the agency is going to have to possibly change the period of time that's being audited to match the contract year, which I don't even know if they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a scenario in which you do both of these things.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm sorry.
And in this current motion, there is no timeline. So should we discuss a timeline for this?
I just wanted to add that I thought if the motion that's on the floor were adopted, that we could work with our accountant to enhance the financial review that is underway. And I think that would be beneficial not only for us, but also for you.
So the motion that they haven't made yet could be modified.
Well, I'm not sure that the motion would be necessary until we submitted the financial review. And then after you got the financial review, you may decide that's not good enough, we want an audit. Because we've already engaged them to do a financial review.
That's why I was kind of seeing them as separate entities.
Yeah, that was my thought, too. Exactly.
Because we can always come back later and say, okay, we still need clarification. So a question for you, Steve, if we gave extra time, in your mind, how much extra time would be needed to develop those second quarterly reports?
If I could have 60 days, I feel comfortable we would get everything that you needed.
Does that work for me? That's fine with you.
I'm hearing your thoughts on this and how difficult it is. Yeah.
Kim?
So where in, have we required the financial review, remind me, somewhere? Mm-hmm. That was from last mm-hmm. time. So last time they were just submit reports and a financial review, but we didn't get the financial review.
Well, the financial review, we did not put a deadline on the financial review because I think we didn't ask you to, because we know it's impossible to do that really fast. So it would have been due June 30th, but, you know, that's... that just seemed like we, and I did talk to the CPA, the partner at MH. And so anyway, sorry.
So if we allowed CUAN to take 2 months, you would need the information a couple of weeks before that meeting. So we want to give them enough time. So I'm thinking April, but April is a horribly busy month for this board because we are in the thick of listening to all the grant applicants to answer questions about their current proposals. And I don't know that we're going to be able to spend this kind of time
do it. I've got good news for you.
Yeah.
There's a tentative second meeting scheduled in April.
Ah, okay.
But I don't, given what you have to do in April, reviewing applications, I don't know if you even want to do it in April, whether you have a meeting or not.
Well, and then May is the vote.
Right, and then you got time.
And then we have time. So do we want to just delay this until June?
I think that's too long to wait for an answer. Because what if the third and fourth quarter reports come back and we don't have the financial review? I mean, it could be, then we request a financial review and then,
So essentially, if we go with March, that's...
When do you expect the financial review to be done?
Okay. He hasn't given me an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard for us to know what you'll be looking at in applications, too.
Mm-hmm.
So this is I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Yeah, well, and I, as much as we'd like to resolve this early, I don't think that the schedule of events for the next few months is going to allow us to address it appropriately. And so maybe giving them extra time to get their reporting done, and then when we get through this list of grant applications for the coming year, then we can say, okay, let's now do this. It's not damaging, anyone or anything in the meantime, I don't think. If we put pressure on them to get it done, then that adds pressure to staff to get all this examined and noted while they're in the midst of getting the reports together for us.
There's a point at which we turn the bulk of it over to you. We get it done in early April, and then we're working on the next step, which is recommendations for funding. So while you're doing the public review and discussion.
I'm willing to delay it until June if necessary. If you feel differently, then we'll ask Mr. Beckett if, CUAN could get this work done in 6 weeks.
I don't know if that's
the
date you give us. That's the date it'll be. Okay.
What would be your drop dead date in March?
In March.
Yeah, because that would be.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah, that would be. Well, this would give me the. These would be the 2 days I'm looking at. That would be like March 5th.
March 5th. Yeah,
I will add that, having dealt with accountants throughout my career, that April is a big month for them too.
Well, you have a very good point there. Yeah. It'd be really tough to get it done in April, even if it's only a financial review. So,
well, we're talking about modifying the motion because there's no time frame on this motion.
Yes. We'd have to modify it, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, then, friendly amendment to the motion. I move that this review be accomplished before June 1st of 2025 and submitted to the board.
Which a separate deadline probably for the agency than from us, because I just learned how hard it is to put this all together in 2 days while doing everything else that we do. So what would be your deadline to the agency? The board meeting is... For board meeting materials, I will need to be finishing those on the weekend of June 7. So if your deadline of June 1 is for them, then we have a week.
Let's make it.
Make it May 15th.
May 15th?
Yes.
Because?
That gives staff plenty of time before the June
That's
meeting.
That's true. Okay.
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 Yeah. May 15th?
I will take that. I will make that as a friendly amendment, May 15th.
Okay, so could we read that motion again with the amendment?
I move to allow CU Autism Network to submit third and fourth quarter fiscal year, or its program year, PY.
Yes.
Yeah.
PY is program year. 2024 reports to detail program activities and clarify the full year of financial transactions, and that board will be submitted to the staff at the DD board by May 15th of 2025.
And I agree with the amendment, so I'll second that. Any other? We need to vote. Yes. Do we? And probably a roll call. There are only three of us.
Sure. Kim Fisher?
No.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Vicki Nyswander?
Yes. Yes, thank you for your concerns and your solutions. And we'll continue to work with you all to make this happen. You do important work, but so does this board. And we have to be able to work together on it. So thank you for your efforts. All right, moving on to the next. Oh, we lost everybody here. There won't be any agency reports today. The agency request from PACE is the next thing on the list. PACE has asked for additional time to do their reporting. Their audit is late. Is that the one thing? Yeah, their audit is late, and they need extra time to complete the audit in February and March. And so will we do that?
So there's a motion on the agenda, I think I did that.
Oh, is it on the agenda?
Doesn't make it easier because now you're having to look in two different places.
That's all right.
Because what they're asking for is that we continue to pay them while waiting for their audit. There's a grace period, like an automatic extension to March 31st for everybody, but they don't get paid from the deadline is December 31st.
Oh, God.
So they're asking for a waiver of the payment suspension.
And they've never had everyone's had problems with audits and getting them done on time in the past, but has PACE traditionally had issues every year?
This is a great question for Stephanie and Chris, because if I try to answer, I'm going to bumble around. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Chris?
I don't have access to those records at this moment.
They had the same issue last year. I know that for certain.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at how many years besides last year and this year. I don't know for sure.
But nothing sticks out to either of you as far as all. This is just one more thing that happened. It's not like something that sticks out to you.
Right after the, oh gosh, that's weird. Right after the deadline, we did a really quick analysis of prior lateness. I may be able to find it. It's not in Stephanie's staff report, but it was one of the things we were looking at when we were talking about that.
I think this is one more of those situations where it's a small agency who lost staff at a critical time and missed deadlines.
Yeah, Unfortunately, I didn't look at the history with PACE. I'm sorry, you guys. Stephanie, you don't remember, right?
I'm not sure of myself, so I don't want to say anything.
Okay, thank you.
So, yeah, so this is for this past year, and they stopped receiving payments when?
They've not received their January payment. Suspension started on January 1.
Okay. And if they get their audit done in time, will they get their final payments?
If they get their audit submitted prior to the end of March, they will receive all the payments that have been withheld thus far, which right now is just January.
Okay, but obviously if they're going to take February and March to get their audit done, they won't be getting payments.
Those payments would be withheld as well and then would be released upon receipt of the audit.
Mm-hmm. Is that the preference of the board? I'm sorry?
So I think we have Michelle Ingram online, right?
Oh, do we have Michelle?
Yeah.
Oh,
and just
stop sharing. Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yes, I'm here. So basically what took place was last year we had an auditor who we had signed a letter of intent with, and then they backed out at the last minute, and so we had to find a different auditor, and so we were late last year getting it in. We've been late this year because we are short on staff. We've had a changeover. Our executive director, Sherry Longcore, left at the end of September due to medical reasons and ended up going into retirement. And so I took over as the interim. I'm doing my job plus my previous job of administrative assistant while also training a new office manager. Plus, I've gotten COVID twice. I do not have an immune system, so that's a whole other ball game. But anyway, I've been out sick with COVID twice, and so I've not been able to get all of the information to the auditor. And so we are still in the process of working on it. They send me a list. I send them what they ask for. So I'm assuming, I'm hoping that we could get everything done by February, but as a grace period, I had asked through March. But with as small of an agency as we are, we really have to have the funding just to be able to keep our doors open and pay staff. Which is why I had put the letter in for it. To my knowledge, we've only had the two audits that have been late. Now, I was gone for a period of about 4 years in between when I was here previously, and now I don't believe they had to ask for any extensions at that time, but I didn't have to ask for any when I was here previously, and that was from 2013 to 2019.
Well, thoughts? It'd be nice to have a full board here, wouldn't it, to have this conversation? But we don't.
So I'll just note in the letter, I mean, it sounds like PSWs won't be able to be paid, right?
No. PSWs have nothing to do with this.
Sorry, that it might impact the PSWs.
It might impact the program, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So we have to make a decision. What's your... extension or no extension? We have two choices here in my mind. We can either extend and allow the payment, or we say you can get your payment when the audit is submitted. What would you be more inclined to vote for? It's hard work.
So I'll just say I think this is a harder decision for me because I see that Pace is doing the work that they're claiming they're doing than the previous decision. But if we don't stick to our rules, then it's difficult.
I would like to make a motion that we suspend our strict guidelines about audits and allow PACE until the end of March of 2025 to submit their audit, and meanwhile that they be paid for January, February, March, and this will not be extended past March of 2025.
I'll second that motion.
So when you say end of March, do you mean March 31st?
March
30th.
It's on the agenda.
Well, so here's a thing, like when we get agency requests, I don't always have time to write a memo that's meaningful, but what would be really great is if you did have a motion somewhere near the agency request. I'm learning, and I'm really sorry to put things fine. In so many different places.
So the motion would be that we waive suspension of payments due to late fiscal year 24 audit and authorize CCDDP staff to release payments as scheduled. That's the action that we just approved. The only thing that is different is that you want the audit submitted by the end of March.
Actually,
the way that Ann said it would be fine because that's 100% consistent with the requirements right now. Like, if they don't have it by March 31st, then you have to decide whether to cancel their contract as of March 31st. And there's a secondary thing I'll share with you after you're done with this.
Okay. All right. So is everyone clear on the proposal? Okay. And again, I think maybe we'll do a roll call vote on this if there's no more discussion. All right.
Was there a second?
Yes, I seconded it.
Okay. Are you ready for the roll call?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Kim Fisher?
Yes.
Vicki Nyswander?
Yes. All right. So you have your extension, Michelle.
Thank you very much. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
Okay, so we do a lot more of this with the Mental Health Board, and we have been for a long time, and we could talk later about some of what we're learning there, about sort of like inadvertent impacts on the systems, but there is something that we have been talking about that I need to alert you to, and that is an agency is not eligible for funding if they don't have the audit by the time of the application, which is February 10. So if this audit is not done by February 10, what I would like to do is just hold on reviewing the application until we have the audit. So, like, yeah. Because this has not really happened very often to the DDB. It's a much larger problem on the Mental Health Board side. They're going to have some long discussion about what to do, and this will be my recommendation, is that we just wait. March 31st is the drop-dead deadline, and then we can, you know what I mean? Like, maybe next year we move closer to, if it's not done by the time of the application, you are not eligible for funding and the application is not reviewed or considered. But not to do that this year. Is that okay?
Yeah, that makes total sense. Okay. All right. Unless Angela has something to add as far as agency reports, she did hers already, so I guess we'll skip that. We don't have any county board input. Oh, unless there's somebody online. Is there anybody online besides Michelle? Any agency input?
Pace.
Okay.
Last month, LaShawna and I, we do a outreach event with Aline. Didn't their shows and starting next month, we will have a new staff member at Pence.pa. /pl.w/lives because Lachana took a new job.
Yeah, that kind of stuff happens, doesn't it? Especially in this field.
Yes, but it did not take long to find a new one.
That's encouraging.
Yes.
Thank you, Paula. Any questions for Paula? No? Does anybody else have input? Oh, okay.
Hey, Paula, I missed a word, I think, or maybe two words. You said that you and Lashana do a huge event with a limited something, and then I missed that word.
A big choice.
Okay.
The A was bent program.
All right, thank you. Does anybody else have a agency information to share? All right, thank you. No mental health board input. Maybe we'll get a new liaison assigned tomorrow, but we don't know that for sure. Do board members have any announcements or input?
Yeah, I've had a thought during this meeting, especially in relation to our newest member, who clearly only had an hour allocated for the meeting and probably had a false idea about how long these meetings can last. Because
this is a fairly long one, isn't it?
Well, this was a long one because we had a long presentation and then we had a lot to discuss. But our meetings for the rest of until summer are going to be long because we're going to have a lot more to discuss. And when we're discussing our allocations, 2 hours is minimal for these meetings. So I think the expectation for board members needs to be clear that these meetings basically should be allocated for 2 hours, and during our more important meetings, it's possible that they could go over, although we'll try not to do that.
Yeah. Though I think Lynn doesn't necessarily have control over what they're told because they're appointed and you kind of get that information.
But in orientation, right? They should be told that. And I have a suggestion that we change the start of the meeting time to 8 o'clock because that would allow a practicing physician to block out 2 hours and still get to clinic by 10, which seems to be a reasonable time since we're meeting during the workday. Otherwise, we're just pretty much confining ourselves to people that are either unemployed or have good academic appointments we can take time off or retired.
I'm not sure that I can gain access to any of this equipment before 8:30, so it does take us a long time to set up the meeting. It takes about an hour to set up the meeting. I'm fine with that. I might go home and cry about it, but I can do it. I can do it, and we have enough team members. We can split our energies. It's just getting the media in order to run the meeting relies on a totally different department, people who aren't here to unlock the doors for us until 8. So it's not your problem. I totally hear you.
Okay, well, that was just a suggestion. It wasn't aimed at making you cry.
No.
And I do understand that.
No, just because I'll be here. Today I'll be here till at least 8, sometimes 10.
Yeah.
Because the mental health board business, you know, those meetings are not only long, but they're really hard on the chairperson. And so we often are debriefing until 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, whoa, maybe we should talk about a different day for your meetings, too.
Maybe all of those suggestions should be open. Maybe we could change the agenda so that the really important decision-making things are put earlier in the meeting. And put presentations at the end.
Well, Can I say, like, here's the can of worms. I think there's, whenever we are asked or you are asked to make exceptions to rules everybody else has to follow, there's a risk of injury to the whole system. There were a bunch of people here who left who would like for rules to be easier on them, and we don't. So, we could be in for a lot of long conversations like this. Ugh. I tried to put this late in the meeting to kind of demonstrate that the other stuff is actually important to us, too. So I know what you're saying, and I don't really know a way around this, because you do have the authority, the responsibility, and the right to consider every special circumstance for as long as it takes. So on that, we have had bad experiences putting the DD board meetings in the evening. I don't know if that would work for the current DD board, but it might give you more flexibility. So if really changing the time, we can sure mess around with the agenda and try to do better, but I think you're going to, when these things come up, you're going to have to talk about them for a long time.
Well, these were just ideas to put forward. I mean, I see this person who's got the clinic responsibility, which I understand, and I don't think he's going to be able to be with us after 10 o'clock on a regular basis. So,
and that's problematic,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
and I've heard about people who were really interested in serving on this board choosing not to apply because of the time. So you raise a really important point, and we can, if you want to explore this over the next few weeks.
In June.
Okay. I mean, I hear you, and this is just, well, this stuff is just hard, and I don't think there are any shortcuts for you except to explore a different time. So.
All right. And did you have any input, Kim?
Just a motion to adjourn.
I'll second that. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Recording stopped.